The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Here we go. Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we are the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. Tonight's show, we've got Eric Gutman back with us. Eric's been off a few weeks, and We got a hell of a subject tonight. We're going to talk about the mental aspects, mental control. We're going to get into training. We're going to get into maybe even talking a little bit about weight loss. But Eric will explain more of what got him going on this. And it's very important. I can't talk about the mental will enough here. I think it just kind of gets put to the wayside because they're going to bring you in somewhere, train you all nice and neat, and get you all straightened out, and away you go. Well, it's not like that at all. So I want to introduce Eric on to anybody that doesn't know anything about him, which I can't believe you don't, but he is in the Air Force.
Navy.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. Don't kill me. He's a naval officer. God, dog. I should never said that. Lucky you can't get me here. Eric's an author and a writer. He's been on the show now every week on Motivation and Muscle, and he and I are working on a special project right now called 533. Eric, obviously, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you back. And if you don't mind, you know, let's talk briefly about 533, but we got a hell of a subject tonight. Like I told you before, you got me pretty fired up about it. So let's just give everybody a little brief rundown because we haven't talked about it in a few weeks.
So you want me to do a little like 533 update?
Yeah, if you would. And welcome to the show, man. I'm glad to have you back here. It's good to have you.
Oh, same here. It's always a pleasure. Well, here's something that's really interesting from my point. I was talking to you earlier. You know, right now I am doing the top part of the overhead press. Yep, with yep. 230 pounds, and 4 weeks ago when I tested my one rep max, it was 225. So I'm actually now training after 4 weeks, 5 pounds over my one rep max. So right now, 230 pounds is my working weight for the top part of the overhead press, whereas 4 weeks ago, 225 was my one rep max. Definitely getting stronger. I've added 4 pounds of muscle since New Year's, because again, I've only been this program on 8 weeks. I started at 214 pounds. I got up to 217 pounds. Then I did a liver cleanse and I dropped back to 214 pounds. And I weighed myself right before this call as I was leaving work. I got on the scale at the gym and I hit 218. And that is 218 of muscle. I can definitely feel my strength increase. I feel great. And again, it's amazing how when you dedicate yourself single-mindedly to one pursuit, your body gets really good at that. So I'm very happy about it, very excited.
Congratulations, man, because, you know, for anybody that doesn't know, Eric is doing the stuff that I do, which is all dead stop training. By that, I mean this. There's no rebound with the weight. Eric is starting this from certain points in the power rack, dead stop, and having to lift it. For anybody that hasn't done that, he's not kidding when he tells you that there's no bull here. I mean, 5 pounds on a lift is busting your ass here. 4 pounds of body weight is incredible. People pay trainers big money to do that. And what we're doing with Eric here is we're going to build him into a monster, literally. Wait till you hear in the next 8 weeks what he'll be doing, because eventually we are going to put this product out. But right now we've got something that I feel is – now, you got to remember, Eric is an established lifter too. among all the other things he does. I mean, you, if you've gone to his website and read any of the material he writes, you know that this guy pretty much can go right across the board with anything. But we decided we want to do a little something different with him. And being that he's done some stuff, this definitely makes life a little easier. But I'm sure he'll tell you, dead stop is like nothing you've ever experienced. Would that be fair to say, Eric?
You know, what's interesting about dead stop is that when you start the training and, you know, you use a conservative weight, you know, you get really excited about it because you are doing basically 5-3-3, right? So that's 11 reps total for your upper body and 11 reps total for your lower body. And in the beginning, it's easy to add those 5 pounds every single week. But eventually, when you start hitting that weight, which is kind of like what I call scary weight, right?
Yeah.
So the first time I bust through these plateaus, it literally takes everything you have. You know, for 1 second, you know, it's like you see the stars, you see the yellow dots. And then once you get to that stage and you've reached your weight, I'd say that the day before you're filled with excitement because you want to do it because you're going to accomplish something you haven't done before. But the day of the workout, when you load the bar, you have a little bit of apprehension. And you basically face your fear and you go do it. And like I said in one of the calls, you know, sometimes you think you're going to finally master a certain weight and you get stuck in it for maybe 3 to 4 workouts. But when then finally you do conquer it, there's no doubt in your mind that you did this, that you have had to be stronger because you've been stuck at that for 3 or 4 workouts, right? And you finally mastered it. And then eventually you really get used to the feel of progress. And I've told you this before. I think the biggest motivator for people to stick with any program is success, is progress.
Yeah.
If you're doing the same thing over and over again and you don't see anything from your efforts, you go, I think I should do this. I don't know. But when you're saying, man, like I've been adding 5 pounds to my lift on a regular basis. So regular basis might be 1 week, 2 weeks, or maybe 3 weeks, but you're always on an upward momentum. That means you're always improving. And that is very exciting. That's something that keeps you motivated to keep doing it. But again, like don't be fooled. It's going to get to the point where it gets scary because you're going to reach a weight where you're coming up against what I call the edge of your humanity at that point. So you know, whatever my limit is, I'm busting up against it. Again, let's say you take a guy like Eric Fiorillo who does the Husafeld Storm. So his limit might be a couple of steps far away from me. But again, when everybody runs up against their edge of humanity, it's a scary place to be when you start, but it's very rewarding when you walk through it because it's like one of the things about the military, they say, is you get a bunch of civilians go in there, and then they have to prove themselves, and there's no mommy, there's daddy, there's nobody there to do something for you. And with 5-3-3 training, I feel it's like the same way. You get by yourself in that power rack, so there's no spotters, there's no nothing. The power rack is your spotter. And that thing's going to be at the dead stop range. So for overhead press, that might be at eye level. And then you're going to go 2 stops down, which might be throat level. And you're going to get in this cage and lift this thing. And again, that sounds very simplistic, and I know Eric will understand. But when you're pushing the kind of weight that really challenges your body, it's going to take everything you have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like a cardio workout mixed into the strength. Like I said, there's been points where I see the yellow dots.
That's the best, man. I love it. Hey, look, I'll tell you, Eric, right now. I mean, technically, I'd love to do this on and off where we do a break with it a month and go a whole year with you. Because my feeling is this. Not only would your weights be monumental, okay, and you would get as big and as thick as you want to be, but the thing that would be interesting then in, say, like 16 or even the last quarter of 15, now we turn you loose on something that you want to do. Maybe we turn you on a farmer's walk or a tire flip, or maybe we'll just exclusively work the dead stop squat with, say, heavy pullovers. Because that right there will still make you a Superman after you've done this, no matter what. And then we take and switch you back. I'll tell you what, you want to devote two good years to something that I'll make the guarantee to you that if it doesn't work, you can come up here and give me a body slam if you want, all right? All I'm saying is this, I believe in this so much and so deeply, and I've done it for so long. And the only other guy I know that's done it, the big stuff, is Bud. You know, because this shit, I don't like saying things are hard, but this shit is hard. And it's very hard on you mentally and structurally. But I also think it's very healthy, too, because one reps doing singles, I think, are not only the safest, but I think they're the most productive thing you can do, especially when you're in a power rack. And I'll leave it at that, because all I can say to you, man, I'm proud of you. You're doing a hell of a job. You know, you weren't afraid. You know, when I brought this up to you, it was none of this hemming and hawing shit that, well, I don't know if I got time or I don't want to get that sore. You know, you're like the fish that bit the bait, man, and you went after it. And I give you all the credit, dude. I'm proud of you. I really am. Now let's get into one of our favorite discussions. And we did do it. We did somewhat here. We've already talked about the mental deal here. Let's get into it, man. You take it away, and when you're ready for me to add, just let me know. So we're gonna start talking right now about mental aspects. So hit it there, boss.
Well, you know, I take a lot of time to think and reflect in the morning, and I basically realized that if you are listening to this podcast, you want to improve your life in some way or other. I'm thinking it has to do a lot with strength, but I also bet that you just really want to improve your life. And it got me thinking, well, what are the limits? What is it that sets limits on what you can achieve, whether it be in strength or in life? So it led me to believe the limits really start in your thinking. And I'm going to tell you the thing that brought it to my attention, which is what I mentioned at the beginning before we started recording, is that I went to Jacksonville, to Naval Station Mayport, for a conference, a naval conference. And it just so happens that my sister and her husband, my brother-in-law, were there in St. Augustine. So I drove down to meet them, and we were having lunch. And they were all, you know, very concerned about they were eating, because like most Americans, they wanted to lose weight. Okay, and they were explaining me what they were doing, what they could do to eat healthier, and they were concerned about calories and food combinations. And as I kind of said, yeah, that's right, hey, here's what I would do, and, you know, just real basic stuff like, hey, you know, if you could have, like, meat and fibrous vegetables for your dinner, that would be really good because, you know, by avoiding stuff that spikes your blood sugar, you know, you'll digest it better. You will get better growth hormone at night. You know, very simple stuff like that, using real food. And then they asked me what I was doing, and I told them I was doing 5-3-3, and I was giving them a rundown of what it's like. And then they asked, okay, so when does that stop? Like, when do you reach the point where you don't have to do that anymore? Because I realized that what they were doing with their diet and exercise is not because they wanted to do it. It's because they wanted to reach something which in their mind was called the weight they should be, which is a thin weight, right? Sure. And they didn't enjoy any part of it. And they felt that as soon as they reached that, they could finally stop doing this workout and diet crap, right? So when I'm talking about 5-3-3 and they're asking me, like, when does it stop? When have I done enough that I don't need to do it anymore? And I said, you know, it's really open-ended. I don't have to stop at any time. I can do this type of training, and I have an end point. It's open-ended, so I'm just going to see how strong I can get. So I'm going to get as strong as I can on this. I don't know what that end looks like, you know? And I thought, why would I think that way, and why would they have that kind of like – it's the aversion to train. It's kind of like the necessary evil, and they're really hoping for that – get off point, that, you know, jumping off point where you don't have to do it anymore. And why is it that people like you and me adopt these open-ended, well, how good can I get type things, which require more and more incremental effort. It requires more and more incremental discipline. So I started thinking, you know, again, because I set the time in the morning, and I'm going to talk more about this later, to think and reflect, I started thinking, what are the things that limits people's thinking? And you know what? For the best part of it, I'm going to tell you what it is. It's a lot of it has to do with media and things that are meant to control you. And I'm going to start with the first one, which I'm neither for nor against. But religion is really a control mechanism on a lot of people. And I'm going to tell you what I mean by that, just in case people start misrepresenting what I say. Again, I grew up Catholic, so Christianity is what I know. So I will speak about it from my point of view, and nobody here has to agree or disagree. I'm just sharing my point of view, and you try to get from it the main points. Mm-hmm. In my point of view, any school that is based on Christianity, whether it be Catholicism or anything else, should really be at the forefront of cranking out Jesus's. And what I mean by that is that I'm not a Bible scholar, but I do know that he said, what I have done, you can do also. So I started to wonder, so what would a person who's able to really imitate Jesus, right? If you could say that Christianity is a school that cranks out Jesus-like individuals, what would be some of their characteristics? And I said, well, I came up with eight little things. One, they could walk water. So I'm not making this as a joke, but I'm saying you could have individuals with the ability to walk on water and that be normal. Number two, they'd never get sick, you know, so no health care, no Obamacare, no pharmaceuticals. Okay, throw that out the window. Number three, you would manifest all your needs, and you could do that in a job, or you could just manifest what you need. So when he had 5,000 people and they needed to eat, and they said, you know, we only got six fishes and five loaves of bread, hey, you know, there's food for everybody. So what would happen if you could manifest everything you need based on your own inner guidance? Number four, you could heal others. So now you not only do not get sick, but if, let's say, you're in a family, right? I have four kids. I could heal all my children until they learn how to do this, and they would never need to go to a doctor. Number five, you would not really be driven by materialism. You know, you would not be a materialistic-driven person. You would be driven by spiritual pursuits, right? So in a way, that would mean you would be almost incorruptible because you can't be bought off. Number six, you would live as long as you want. So again, I'm not a Bible scholar, but I understand that Jesus was crucified and that he came back. And then when he decided to go back up to heaven, well, then that's when he ascended. So if you had the ability to control how much time you spend on this earth, and this is, you know, of course, without the need for the medical establishment, you know, what type of a person would you be? And then seven, you would have no vices. So what would happen to the alcohol, tobacco, drug industry, if you didn't have any vices? And finally, the most important one is you would have no external controls. So I ask you, what would happen to a state or a society or a government where every single man and woman could do this by the age that they were 30? So that by the age they're 30, they can do these eight things that I've talked about. And the one conclusion I came is, if you had a society built with these type of peoples, they wouldn't need a state or government or any type of enforcing mechanisms or any type of business that was not aligned with life.
Right.
So if we kind of see what's going on, then we have to step back a little bit. And again, I'm not for or against religion. I'm just saying, if you step back and think, this is what I think religion should produce, this is the type of training that religion should give you, and this is what you should be able to do as a practicing member of your religion, and what you realize is that basically all religions fall very far behind of what they should be doing. Again, this is according to my viewpoint, right? Why? Well, you know, as I understand it, in Christianity was not very popular in the beginning. In fact, if you ever get a chance to go to Rome and you go to the catacombs, you see that the early Christians had to go in tombs where all the dead people were to practice whatever they were practicing. until at one point, you know, Constantine in 325 AD decided to make it the state religion of the Roman Empire, and that was merely to control the population. So whatever the Christians were doing before it became the official state religion is probably true Christianity, and everything that we've gotten afterwards is in some way or another meant to make you a good citizen, which again is not neither good nor bad. It's making you a good citizen is a good thing. I am a naval officer. I love the Navy. I am a member of government. I'm just thinking out loud why people have limits in their thinking and what are the factors that have contributed to this. So if you would be incorruptible, and if every member of society was incorruptible and could manifest basically the life they wanted, never needed any pharmaceuticals, was healthy as long as they want, it would create basically a free society. And what I venture to put out there is that whoever is benefiting economically from the way things are now has a vested interest in you not becoming this free person that does not need all these things. They don't want people that are free of vices, because vices cost money. So the tobacco industry is a billion-dollar industry, you know, and basically you give them your money, they give you something that later creates a burden on the healthcare system, which the taxpayer has to then subsume. So there is no interest in the people who sell vices in for you to live a clean life, because they would lose money and control. Because by having money, not only do they control you, but they control government. And, you know, all these contributions, all these politicians they can buy will now do their will, right? And they will steer society in a way that allows them to keep the money and the power that they currently have. So that's good for you to then step back, and we all have some forms of control, is to ask yourself, well, how are you being controlled? You know, and again, you know, one of the ways most people are, you know, and I put myself in this category, is when you have jobs that give you money for your time. Again, I'm in the Navy. I love being a naval officer. I think it's the greatest thing, because every 2 to 3 years, there's a new adventure. I'm in a different place. It has, you know, upward mobility, and by that I mean it's really more responsibility. If you've proven yourself and they don't kick you out, they give you more responsibility, and you get, eventually they give you more rank to go ahead with that responsibility. So I think it's a very structured system. I like that. But again, I am in a system with most people who have jobs are, where you go to a place and you trade your time and your life energy and you get money. The sad thing is that for a lot of people, it only takes away vital energy. It never gives you any vital energy back. So in the Navy, I'd say, hey, 20% of the time I do the kind of stuff that people see on TV, and I get so excited about it that it actually gives me energy to do. But hey, you know, 80% of the time there's a lot of admin stuff, and anything that has to do with Excel I usually hate, which when I do, it takes away my energy. But again, you know, they say that being a professional is doing what has to be done, whether you like and whether you feel like it or not. So that's part of being a professional. So that is my first thing is to can you hear me?
I'm with you, brother.
Okay. The first thing is the religious control, and then I'm going to open up to see what are your thoughts about that.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here too, for all of it, because this is where someone's going to say to you, because I've heard these arguments before. They're going to say, well, everyone has free will, freedom of choice. And that's how they're going to try to lay the mat down on you there, because they're going to say those are all good in the type of world you want to create. But if I come to you, you're the tobacco vendor, or you're, you know, you got a nice bourbon I like. And you know what? You're selling a bottle of bourbon for $45 a bottle. I go drink the stuff, drive my car through an oak tree, and I'm dead, all right? Now, nobody wants that, obviously, but, and I know what you're saying with the manipulation and the media and all that stuff, because let's face it, Eric, the world is, this.
You know, Eric, when we're talking about, especially with churches and everything, I'm kind of mixed on a lot of stuff with this now. It's you know, I look at the Catholic Church in a different way too now. Obviously we know all the scandals, but I'm sure if you look under enough places, you'll find it everywhere. It just happened to be their day, whatever it was. But, you know, I can remember looking at old pictures and stuff. You know, at one time on the walls you had, you know, big lions. Now you have, like, babies suckling. I think, like, everything's kind of softened a lot. I know that a lot of people say, well, it's very rigid and all this. That's not the point of what I want to get into here, really. But I think with all 8 points is this. I think that you nailed it right on the head. I mean, if you don't have things around you constantly coming at you, buy me, do me, live with me, you know, like all this stuff you see, you know, it's over the top now. It's like, I don't need to see every girl walking down the street with her pants hanging halfway down her ass with a thong now. All right. And I'm not a prude kind of guy at all, but there's no excitement, man. It's like, I don't want to see a half nude chick, man. It does nothing for me. I've seen enough of them. All right. It's the same way with tobacco or liquor or, you know, Catholicism or, you know, government. Obviously we know the perpetrators all over the place, but I also think too, the smart people, the like-minded people that understand the game, and I'm going to call it a game because it's a big game, and it's a big money game. If you understand it, you can still thrive in a life like this, and you can still do very well. The problem is when you have massive media coming at you all the time, and you and I both know. It's bigger than it's ever been. I mean, phones, iPads, you name it, and I don't want to give anybody advertising either. But the point of the matter is when you're so engulfed in this stuff, and it's just like standing in the sea and everything's around you, what are the majority of people going to do? Well, they're going to buy into it and live it. And what better way to get through to you? Media controls everything, your buying habits, your living habits, your vices, everything. So yes, I went a little longer than I should have, but your 8 points are well taken, man. I agree with them, but how now, this is the best part. Now we're talking about the motivation, the control of things over us, you know, the whole deal, the mental aspects. What do we do to change this then? How do we approach now to, you know, like you're saying with your when you visited your sister and brother-in-law? Okay, they've listened to enough things, I'm sure, about weight loss, weight gain. You know, what do? How do I do it? How do I keep it off? You know, she's asking you, and he's asking you, well, this project you're doing, now, when are you done with it? Well, this stuff is never done. This is your life now, and I don't see why people can't buy into having a better life. Why do you need all the other things? That's the next question. So what do you think?
So to kind of give a encompassing view on that, so when I was thinking about this in the morning, and again, I think the two things, like what do people do, I think it's two things. Is one is awareness, and then the other is the dedicated thinking time. I'm going to cover that later. But here's what I want you to become aware. Like, I started thinking about history, right? How did we get this place? And just follow me here and tell me if you agree. So when the Roman Empire got big, you know, and they got bloated and corrupt and they wanted to control the people, what they did is they focused on the Colosseum and the games to keep people entertained, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So that's the Roman Empire. And again, you know, you see all these movies and the Colosseum is a central thing. And what are they doing there? They're just eating and watching something. They're not plotting. They're not thinking. They're not, you know, doing anything constructive. They're being entertained. When the Spanish colonized Latin America, one of their strategies was called the 3 B's. And the 3 B's, translated into English, stand for bottle, card games, and dancing. That is the actual Spanish strategy for keeping the colonies in line. The 3 B's in Spanish, it was called baile, botella, y baraja, which means, again, dancing, bottle, which alcohol, right, and gambling. Yep. again, these are the types of things that keep you entertained, right? And mm-hmm. also keep you plugged into the norm, right? Whatever the state wants you to do. Now, I'm going to give you three more instances. So then in the United States, what we had? We had slavery, right? So slavery uses basically fear because there's some very serious repercussions on slavery for not doing what your master told you, right? Then we have what some people have called modern slavery, which started like when people had to work for script. So this is kind of like the coal miners and the people who worked for a company, but because there was nothing there, the company put on a store, and they would pay for, you know, their food and their living expenses through what was called script, which was basically they open up this little notebook and they say, well, you know, if you earn $6 a week and you wanted to buy that soap and that much food, that $6, they'll take it off your paycheck. So in the end, the company had to outlay very, very little money for the labor force, yet they were working there 20, 30, 40 years. Now let's move on to today. So what do we have today? So that's the inheritance, the Roman Empire, the Spanish slavery, modern slavery through hourly wages and script. Now we have just full-blown entertainment. And this is to me the problem. When you use all your free time being entertained and disconnected from the world. And, you know, it started with TV, but back in the day, people watched TV. And I'm saying watched. I'm not saying not to ever watch TV. And I think sometimes you need to. Like sometimes I know I want to do things, and sometimes the best thing to do is to do absolutely nothing and take that one extra day of rest so you can actually go kick ass the next day. But what happens when instead of being a thing that you do to recover and recharge, it becomes the main activity, right? What happens when you're watching 6 hours, 8 hours of TV a day for the sole purpose of being entertained? And now it's even worse. So now the new generation is not only getting disconnected when they plop down in front of a TV set, but now because they're carrying their cell phones, right, they're constantly looking at the cell phone and not looking at the world. And what does this mean? What it means is that, unfortunately, the next generation, so that means the generation of my kids, which I'm working against this by teaching them the right things to do, is the next generation is the first generation that's going to have a lower health expectancy than the previous generation. So,
and I also, Eric, I also believe, too, that they could be taken as a country. Seriously. You see a lot of them, and this isn't all the kids either, and I don't want to even come across like that. But being a guy that likes to observe everybody and watch, when we used to take martial arts when we were real young, I can remember my Shion always saying this. He used to drive this into your head, and I've never forgotten it, and I'm always cognizant. Never look down when you walk, all right? Why? Well, there could be someone out there who I would call an opponent, regardless what they want to do to you. You're not looking, bang, you're on the ground, right? They're robbing you, whatever. But this is how I'm going to plug these two together. Think about your experiences anywhere you go. How many kids to maybe mid-20s, what are they doing all the time? Looking down, texting. They don't even know you're in front of them. I've had that happen so many times. Occasionally I walk around them. Most of the time they'll hit me and bounce off me. All right? This is dangerous stuff, man. You know, if you look at the most popular thing on the internet, what is it? Pornography. You know, you're sitting around watching porn all day. How productive a human being are you going to be? So you bring up some very, very good sound points. And, you know, these things, time flows into time, into time, into time. And what we're looking at right now is a generation even below, you know, I mean, they only care about what's going on with, you know, in Hollywood or, you know, or what is, you know, Miley Ray Cyrus, how many more tattoos does she got, or, you know, is she hanging her boobs out more? If that's all you're thinking about in your life, where do you think you're going to go? Plus what you said before, the disconnect, you know, how many places have you gone? they can't even look up at you half the time. Or you'll say thank you, and they look at you like you got 15 heads on you. I got news for you. The real world's a little bit different than what you're playing in and what you're hearing. You go and try to work somewhere, you know, just from being in the military. You take that type of attitude, how long do you think you're going to last anywhere? You're going to wash right out. So these are very dangerous things because it allows mad men and mad women to do whatever the hell they want. And what are you going to do if you're just standing there in a sea of media? So that would be a long-winded answer to your question.
No, but, you know, you're absolutely right because all my friends who come back from Iraq and Afghanistan – naval officers, they say the same thing. You know, Americans would be the easiest people to kill because they are so unaware. And it's because of that, you know, most Americans are walking completely unaware of their surroundings. They're completely locked into their little iPod, listening to music, tuning the world out, like you said, head looking down. So if somebody were to come up with a gun and bang them, they probably wouldn't realize until they hit the ground and that something has happened. But I tell you what, I think we've talked a lot about awareness, and now I would like to offer some very, very simple solutions. And you know, I believe that, you know, the simple answer is the best. And one of the things you can do is to limit the time that you spend watching TV. I mean, I know that there are times when I come home from work and I had the desire to do a bunch of things, and sometimes when you do them, you burn so much energy that basically sets you back a day or two. Sometimes the most strategic thing you can do is to just take a break and watch TV. And when you watch TV as a tool to take a break, that's cool. Now, here's something really interesting, which I find is true. So Brian Tracy, in one of his CDs, said that, you know, when men watch TV, they systematically start turning off parts of their brain.
Really?
So, and I don't know if this happened to you, but this happens to me. That is why, and I've seen this happens to me and my father-in-law when we're in the house. That's why men could be watching TV and they will doze off for 10, 15 minutes, right? Yep. And then they'll come back. Now, here's the interesting thing. When women watch TV, they systematically turn on more and more and more parts of their brain.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, you know, a man will be watching TV going down to 20%, and the woman will be watching TV going up to 80% because they're making the connections and the, you know, oh, he said this to that, and they'll make the whole emotional connection with the whole network. You know, they will make and relate to what they're seeing a lot more, whereas that's what I'm saying. For a guy, it can be a great way to systematically shut down your brain like a catharsis. So just limit your TV time to whatever works. And another great thing is to take some time in the morning, some quiet time, and make sure that the first thing you do is not to read the news or turn on the news station and listen to just negative stuff. Take the time to go blank and really decide what you want. I'm going to give you two very simple, great exercises to do that I found have been very, very well. So wake up a little bit earlier in the morning, and one exercise is called breath counting, and I learned it from a friend of mine called Peter Ragnar. He actually has a book called The Unveiled Mystery of Self-Mastery, and I don't think you can get it now. You could probably get it on eBay or something, get a used copy. But he has something called an exercise for greater mind power. And I'm going to read you two paragraphs that basically describe it. So it's pretty simple. And then I'm going to talk about my experience with it. And I still haven't done it. I've been doing this for like years. And here it goes. Just very simple. It says, in a quiet place, free from intrusion, begin to watch the bellows of nerve force at work in a complete breath cycle. Begin by inhaling, and as your lower abdomen expands, filling your lungs with vitality, your diaphragm will drop. Pause momentarily to feel the electrical sensation accumulate slightly below your navel. Then exhale and suck the abdomen in and up, completely emptying your lungs. Notice the sensation near the navel once again. Now mentally count one. Disciplining your mind to remain free of competing thoughts and mental noise, continue the process. However, when an errant thought arises, go back to the count of one and begin again. Your mind power is well in hand when you can count 100 complete and uninterrupted breaths without a single thought other than the mental picture of the number. And that's the end of the instructions. I can tell you that I've done this since 2007, so that would be 8 years. I have yet to have count from 1 to 100 without a thought coming in. And because of time, basically, I just count to 100. And it usually takes me about 45 minutes when I do that exercise. And again, and that exercise is it's harder than it sounds, because you have to take these deep breaths and just focus on the breath. And you'll find that after the 10th breath, you will start thinking.
Absolutely.
And you know, if I were to start to one, I would basically never leave that house. So I wake up early, maybe like an hour or so, and I would do that exercise. But I'll tell you what it does give you. It gives you amazing perception. And what I mean by that is that as you become aware of what all the thoughts that go on in your head, and you try just to get back to the breath, and you discipline your breath to do that count, whatever you do after, you do with a lot more control and poise. And when you interact with people, right away you can tell, like, this person's nervous, this person can't even, like, you know, there's people out there that cannot sit straight for 2 minutes and look you straight in the eye without fidgeting and doing all kinds of things. The other thing I started to notice that you pick up right away is people who are a little bit sick. And what I mean by this is I've going to certain meetings, and I notice right away when somebody's head bobs a little bit, and I go, I think this person has Parkinson's or something like that. Whereas before, I'd be completely impervious to it. And one of the reasons I wouldn't be aware is because you'd be thinking so much, and you don't care what other people are saying. I'm focusing my own thoughts, you know. So they're almost like an obstruction. When you clear your mind, one thing that Peter said I thought was really good is, like, you kind of, like, it's like think of the mind like a blackboard. And when you do this thing, you're erasing it so that it's brand new board to write stuff on it. Otherwise, you've got like the whole week's worth of scribbles on the board, and whatever you put on the board is not going to be clear, right? That, I think, is a great explanation, and again, it does build mental power. A second one, which might be more fun, is what some people call metronome breathing. So I actually bought a metronome right here. I'm going to tell you how you can get one for free after I show you this. So I went to Amazon, and you can get one for about $25. And what you do is you wind these up. These are for musicians, and they count time. And I set it for roughly 60 beats per minute, because that should be basically your heartbeat. I don't know if you can hear this, so I'm going to set it free. Are you able to hear that?
I hear that perfect, man.
Perfect. Okay, so that's a metronome. And again, you can get them for $25. You wind them up. If you see the movie, one of the Hulk movies, I think one of the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu guys is practicing his breathing with a metronome, or I don't know if it's Bruce Banner is practicing his breathing with a metronome to keep it at a certain point.
That's in the Ed Norton Hulk, the best one, I think.
Exactly.
So 2008.
Exactly. So what is metronome breathing? I'm going to give you an example. So metronome breathing is when you set up a breathing pattern based of a breath in, hold, breath out, and hold. A great starting point is 4. But how do you know what 4 is? That's what your metronome is for. So I'm just going to do one cycle with you just so that people get an idea. So I would breathe into the count of 4, and here we go, and begin. 1. Now I would hold it for 4. Exhale for 4. And hold for 4. All right, that's what it would be. And, of course, because I was narrating it, it wasn't exactly true to form. But if you're able to do that for 5 to 10 minutes in the morning, you'd be surprised, because here's something I call, like, nature's speedball. So if you take any stimulant, whether it be caffeine or anything like that, early in the morning, and you start doing this breath counting with the metronome before it hits you, at about the 10-minute mark, you will feel when the caffeine activates your brain. But because you've been breathing rhythmically, your body will remain calm while your mind gets alert. So you will remove all the jittery feeling from any stimulants, but you will retain, you will actually feel your brain waking up as your body is more and more relaxed. And that allows you that whatever you do after, whether it's plan your day or just head to work, you will be in a much better place than if you just down a bunch of cups of coffee, watch the news, and just listen to rape, murder, and mayhem, and then go get in your car, turn on the news, and it's more rape, murder, or mayhem. And then you get to work, and you basically, you shot your cortisol up, you're full of adrenaline from the news and the coffee, and now you start your work day. Whereas if you – again, I've always said I love my stimulants and I love my caffeine. Like now I'm taking – I went to a store in Jacksonville and they had pharmaceutical-grade caffeine. So instead of like a guaraná tablet, it's just basically a white crystalline powder, which is 100% pure pharmaceutical-grade caffeine. And a very, very small scoop is 200 grams of caffeine. So no, 200 milligrams of caffeine. And you know, it's really great because it's really clean. It gives you energy and it has everything you need and everything you don't want, you know? And again, when you take these things in the morning and you add the meditation, it gives you a very even keel and it makes your quality of life go up. It also enhances your ability to perceive things. So that's, again, why if I summarize what we talked about today, limits to thinking and what it can mean for your workout and for your life. One is just be aware of the controlling factors out there. And two is definitely dedicate some time in the morning to meditate and take control of your mind. And again, meditation does not have to be some type of activity associated with any particular type of religious belief. I'm just talking about watching your breath and taking control of your mind. That's what it means to me. And hey, if you got any questions or comments, yeah, please let me know.
No, look, I'll tell you this, Eric. When it comes down to everything that we're getting into, especially with the way we lift and do the things we do, you know, Bill Crawford and I got into more of this chat about that. And you know something? Our brains work different. I don't care what anybody says. You know, you and I have talked about the whole DNA thing like I have with a lot of other people. I just think we as people, for whatever reason we got into this whole thing, we're just wired different than a lot of men. And I don't care if that pisses guys off. We are. A weightlifter, I'm talking a true weightlifter. I'm talking some guy walking on, you know, 20-inch thighs that's got a pair of, you know, 17-inch arms. I'm not talking about that guy or some gal, you know, that she's got ripped abs, but she's basically anorexic, okay? That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about men and women that understand physical culture, understand what we have to do to get there, whether you're going to breathe, caffeine, you're going to come up with your own set of, you know, the iron will to get to where you got to get, your beliefs, whether they're beliefs that you grew up with or new beliefs. This is the way things transpire, at least in my life. But I'll tell you this. I don't do a lot of outside stuff. I like to read a lot of the old literature. There's certain, you know, obviously, you know, when you talk about, you know, a Tony Robbins or a Les Brown or any of these guys that have done this stuff. I mean, you know, I go back to the thing like this. I mean, you know, your mind is definitely something you want working. But as I told Bryce today, he was on the show, I believe everything comes from your heart. I believe your subconscious can be the worst detriment to your life because if you're planting seeds of negativity, which we're exposed to it all the time, that doesn't mean it's getting in there. But that is, if you listen, that is like a recorder, and it will play over and over and over. And it'll take a maximum amount of positive things to finally overwrite that. But what I want to get to the whole thing is this. And I've said this to you on other shows and offline too. I think we need a minimum amount of stuff. Like I like basics thinking, barbaric training, and go out there and do what is expected of you. if there's things that you feel you got to try mentally, I'm all for it if it works for you. But this is where I think we get beaten over the head and a lot of good people get wrecked is everyone, it seems like, I don't know about you, but, you know, I love talking to people, and I even people I don't know. I always seem to strike a conversation up with somebody, whether they ask if you lift or whatever. There's always an inroad, okay? But this is what disturbs me more than anything because, you know, we were talking about your eight principles there, but then we got to this media piece, which, once again, I'm going to hit. How many people do you know that they're constantly changing? You know, I call them fixers. They take something that, whether it might be yoga, let's say, or some type of martial art or whatever it's going to be, or, you know, they're into CrossFit, kickbox, whatever it is, and they feel that this is going to change their life, okay? And hopefully they go in there with the premise of that and fully good intention. But you and I both know that it could be a month, it could be 6 months, it could be a year. They might be feeling on top of the world with it, but they still haven't cleared out the junk. And you can try to do it over and over again, but if you don't have what the actual, I guess I'll say the word cause, you know, like we were talking about weight loss, you know, well, is that, what do I do? Is that forever? And I told you, I would always get questions. Well, what do I do now? I've lost the weight. Well, you got to have a plan. I mean, you know, you should continue, obviously, because if you don't, we know what's going to happen. You're going to get in bad habits. But the thing is this, I believe that we're all very rich and wealthy with the tools that were bestowed upon us. I think what you hit it with the breathing. The breathing starts allowing those things to come out. And I know a lot of people get, it's scary because change is scary for most people. You know, how many people, I was thinking today, can you look yourself right in the mirror and tell me what do you see when you look at it? Does it scare you? Is it, you know, these are things that I ask all the time, you know. Can I face one more time going away and you know, in my mind it's done. It is time we got to conquer, okay? I'm going to be the conqueror over in Viking land. But there is a remote possibility something could happen, all right? Are you ready for that? And there's a lot of reasons for that. And I'll tell you the first thing, because I know people said this to me. They're not comfortable. I'm comfortable in my own skin, man. It doesn't bother me. I have enough confidence in my ability where I could go up and strike a conversation with anybody, or they'll come to me. And I'm not being an asswipe about this either. It's not ego. It's not anything. I like, as you know, that's why we're doing this show. I love to talk to people. I like to exchange ideas, whether I agree with you or not. That's what it's all about. But we can shake hands and be friends at the end of the day. That's all I'm looking for. But I do think that the biggest point I'm getting out of what you said, obviously, I think that quiet time, you got to try to start fighting all that crap that's in you and get rid of it. And be comfortable in your own skin. Be confident, because if you're confident, other people will believe in you. And you'll get anything you want done. But you have to discover who you are, what you want to be, and where you want to go. Those are the things that you should be doing. Get off the fucking phone, you know, the iPad. Use it for what it's supposed to be. It's not your third arm or your third head, as I call it. And I think you'll be a lot happier. And I think you'll be able to do the things you want to do. So that's my answer to everything basically you said tonight, and I hope I didn't insult you or anything like that. But,
oh, no.
You know.
I mean, I think everything you said is spot on, because here's like what I'm trying to get at is people are not getting – you know, remember, I think one of the very first calls we had, we're talking about that after you kind of like get a base, you can then kind of depend on yourself. So I'm going to give you an example. So, you know, all these things that I talked about, I didn't – like go to a website and pull them. I basically sat down and I actually thought for myself. So these things, these eight things that I thought about the figure of Christ, that it wasn't like something that was referenced and there were eight bullet points that I could come. No, I actually sat down basically after I did my breathing exercises, which my mind was clear and it just became very apparent, right? This whole thing about the Roman Empire all the way up to today, you know, Roman Empire, Spanish slavery, you know, it wasn't in a book or in a website where it was all spelled out. I basically having a clear mind allows me to go within, think for myself, and create these structures that allow me to understand things. And the problem with a lot of people is that they never have that window where they are disconnected from something else telling them what to think, feel, or do, and just to clear the slate and then think for themselves and then start living their life with more and more inner direction. Again, like you were saying about 5-3-3, you know, there's a lot of people that you're going to show them what 5-3-3 is about. Oh, but what about cardio? But what about this? But what about my biceps? Oh, but what about all these aesthetic little craps, right? And you go, look, if that's what you want, then this is not for you. If you want to get as strong as you want, then set everything aside. Because, you know, part of the thing, too, is like, you know, when you get married, you forsake all others. So if you're going to do 5-3-3, do 5-3-3. Don't add 10 CrossFit sessions at the back end and don't add 10 bodybuilding sessions in the front end because it's not going to work. You have to do 5-3-3. And I'm telling you, if you do it correctly, two training sessions a week, more than enough. And you're, I mean, you will want to do more, but you basically can't do more and improve. You will actually stop your progress if you start training more than that.
And Eric, you and I both know this, all right? When you're doing stuff like that, your body's growing all over the place. And this is the lack of confidence, all right? This is the lack of not believing in yourself, because I'll tell you what they'd say. Well, it didn't work for me. Okay, why didn't it work for you? And it'll be like, well, tell me, why didn't it work for you?
Because I did it for 2 weeks and I didn't get buff.
Well, yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. Yeah, how would you like to just be kick ass strong in 3 months, man? But see, this is once again, I'll say what I said before about you and I, and other people, obviously. We have a different set of ideas. We aren't deflated when someone comes over us and says, "You ought to try this." You know what I mean? You'll really grow strength mentally, all this, you know, and that's what it's all about. You know something? If I was a quitter, when I tore my bicep in 8, I would have quit. Okay? We've talked about this offline. I'll say this to everybody. I've had nights in that garage where I was it took me to my knees, literally. And I would think and say, why the fuck am I out here? Why am I out in 20 below weather with no heat, because I haven't gone and even got heat where I could end up getting frostbite? You know, why am I doing this? You know, why am I going back for a third attempt to Iceland when the potential for disaster could happen? You know, or how about flipping it around and saying when it could be the greatest accomplishment in my life? Okay, I could have quit a long time ago, especially when that happened. That would have been my out if I wanted an out. And no one, I don't think, would even challenge me. There might have been a few, a couple guys that I've known all my life that I've trained with on and off that I believe are real training guys. And they're really stand-up guys that don't F around with you. They'll tell you like it is. That might have been hard to get by. I can think of my buddy Richie. I don't think I would have ever got that by him. Maybe my brother-in-law, maybe my other buddy Joe too. They might have been at first cordial with me. But after a little while, something would have been said, and probably knowing those guys and me, fist would have been flying for sure, because that's happened before. So I'm here to tell you, there's nothing out there that's going to kill you unless you let it, man, unless, you know, you get hit by a bolt of lightning or you just drop dead. Otherwise, I don't know how you'd live with yourself, and that's one of the things I'm living with right now with Iceland, where I was telling Bill the other day, Eric, that stone feels it some days so strong, like it's calling me. And that might sound off the bone right there, but I'm telling you right now, there's DNA in that stone that was there long before me, 200 years ago. I don't know what I've absorbed the last two times I've, you know, picked that thing up. But there's a lot of truth to it. It's living. It's alive, that stone. And it calls to me at times so strongly here that it breaks my heart sometimes. It's like I know I've got to get over there, and I want to get over there, but situations sometimes happen, and you've got to be vigilant enough to be able to get through it and get over there. But when I go over there this year and I walk back on that Viking ground again, other than falling in love probably for the first time in your life, there's nothing out there that matches it, man. Nothing. You know, maybe your kids, you know, things like that. And I don't want to belittle or downplay that at all. But this is a very special thing that very few people will do. They won't do it, even the strongest of the strong, because a lot of them aren't successful with it. You don't want to take that back home with you, because suddenly you don't have that big S in the middle of your chest anymore. But my whole thing for living is this. I don't give a shit about public opinion. There is opinions I do value. But let me tell you something. When you can lay your ass out on the line, win or lose over there, or anything you want to do, you're a very unique human being. And you're somebody I want to be around. And that's how I would wind my end up here with it, Eric. That's what I totally believe.
Yeah, and I concur with you. It's better to have lived, you know, and lost than never to have lived at all, right?
So, absolutely. Hey, look, I'll tell you this, and this might sound like nothing to people, and I usually go to Logan, which for people who don't know, that's in Boston, the fly out. It's cheaper to do that than go down to New York, even though I live in New York. Figure that out. Just driving over there, there's a billion thoughts going through your head, man. And you walk into the airport, and, you know, you got to go through all the stuff, obviously. And we always have dinner before we go and, you know, get on the plane. And the anticipation, man, when you see Icelandic Air sitting there where you know you're going to board very shortly. And in a little over four hours, you're going to be in Reykjavik, man. You're going to be where you've been wanting to go for who knows how long. You're going to get another opportunity. You're going to be in a country that feels like you got one foot in the old world and one foot in the new world. It doesn't get much better than that, I'm telling you right now. Because you know what I always liked? I know where I stand. And that's what I always liked with people that I felt were on the up and up. I always want to know where I stood with somebody. And I think that all relates to everything that we've spoke about tonight, because once I get there, you don't even have to go near that stone. It's like you won the lottery, man. It's like everything you've done to that point now is here. Now it's time to pick it up and throttle 50 meters around that goat pen and have the biggest celebration of your life. And then, if that happens the way I want, then we're going to Latra, and I'm going to go get that stone that ripped my bicep. So we might get the chin and then the knockout blow this time, my friend. So that's it. That's all I need to say.
You know, and you're going to be an avenging force. Then, you know, they say in the military that the most deadly thing that you don't want to fight is when a unit finds a couple of its buddies killed by the enemy, and then they go down hunting the enemy, because at that moment they become an avenging force. So we're talking about morale, again, bringing about mental attitude and stuff. They say that's the most deadly thing, that you never want to face an avenging force. And that's what they always talk about, like what you want to do is you want to lower the opponent's morale before you even actually fight them. In your case, you're an avenging force because – you know, you've got this bicep thing that the stone did to you, and you know it's personal now, and you're going there to prove a point. So if I was a betting man, my money would definitely be on you.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Because when you see the film of this and the size of it, you're going to be, I hope the hell he can do it, man. You know, I will say one thing before we wind up. When we were with all the guys, you know, a lot of them all have had bicep tears, you know, whether it was stones, lifting anvils. Obviously, Steffi was in the World's Strongest Man the year before that, and he blew his bicep right off the bone,
flipping an 850-pound tire in WSM. But I will say this, and it made me feel good, if you can believe that, after that happened. They're like, you know what, man? You got a permanent scar from Iceland nobody else has got other than us right here. And, you know, I had to think for 1 second and said, you know what, man? I do. Iceland claimed my arm. Fixed, but it still got me. And you know what? That's okay. That's better than any tattoo I could ever lay on my skin, because I've got something that was worthwhile, man. You know? And it's something, no matter how this all fans out, I had the guts to go over there at least. You know, that's more than you'll hear out of most of these jibber-jabber mouths out there. The experience, you know, getting ready for it and doing all the things you hope you do this time to make it right, that's where it's all about, man. That's like, you know, you get off that plane and, my God, you're there. And when you go and you go to Husafell, I'll make this quick, and as I've said it before, you know you're there because you'll see that one-room steeple church. There's a big gold cross on the top. When you see that, man, I can't tell you, your stomach feels like it's got a billion butterflies in it, and it's like all you're thinking about is it's almost like, just picture like every friggin' thing you've ever thought about that going off in your head a million miles an hour. And then when you drive up there, you take that right into there, and you'll see the sheep pen to your left, and you're looking and looking. You're kind of far off, but you're hoping whoever lifted that stone dropped it where you can see it. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. You get out of that car, man, and the last time I was there in 11, I was on my knees, and I don't get on my knees for many things, and I kissed the ground. Very emotional, you know, very important to yourself, to me, because it's a part of me now, you know, and as Steve Jack said, you know, it's like a fine woman. You got to learn a lot of things about her, her curves, her feelings, how she is today, you know. And he made complete sense, because his stone is like that. And he called that basically the romance of the stone. And that's really what it's all about. That's what it's all about. So what else? You got anything else, Eric?
No, I've delivered everything I wanted to deliver today.
Did we knock it out of the ballpark or what?
I believe we did.
Yeah, we always do. This was a great show. Why don't you give everybody your information, anything you got coming down the road, and I'll give you mine. We'll wind up and we'll talk a minute off the show.
Absolutely. Well, if this is the first time you're listening to me speak, my name is Eric Gutman. I am a naval officer, and my whole focus is to live as long as I can, as best as I can. I have a website. It's www.ericgutman.com. That's ericgutmann.com. And there you can find my books, DVD courses. And now for 2015, I'm opening myself up to do coaching. So if you're interested in that, hit me up on Facebook. Just friend me on Facebook, Eric Gutman. And let me know if you're interested in personal coaching, and we can take it from there. And that's all I got.
Well, we know they'll get good coaching, so, I mean, that's for damn sure. And that would be a smart move, let me tell you. You'll at least get somebody that understands what's going on in the iron game and really knows what physical culture is and what it entails to get to that point like we were just talking about. This is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell. That's www.fiorellobarbellco.com, www.motivationandmuscle.com. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a 5-star review. Eric and I will do anything. We'll work together with if there's a subject, you know, you want to talk about. Obviously, you know, Eric writes notes. He's very I'm speaking off the cuff mostly. This guy's totally prepared, and that's good. That's a good adjunct to the show. Like I said, you can contact me at Fiorello Barbell at NICAP.R.com.
We'll do whatever we can for you, believe me. I'm trying to think what else. We are on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell, Motivation and Muscle. And we should have a big announcement next week about the weight loss product we're putting out. It's called The Weight Is Over Fast. Totally different from anything that's out there. Just picture smoking body weight stuff you've never seen. Sandbag work and using the old-fashioned barbell, which in my mind is still the best piece of equipment you could ever lay your hands on, believe me. So we'll have more about that. Obviously, we want to reach 1 million people. We're going to keep pushing at that. The show's growing, and anybody out there who hasn't listened to it, you got friends, send us our way. Even kids, I've got my friends who all got 13-year-old boys that are all getting into physicality now are coming and listening to Motivation and Muscle. So I've got to be a little more toned down with my language, but I'm sure they've heard it all before by now, but that's not neither here nor there. I think we're even going to start doing some shows for kids. I'm going to talk to Eric about this down the road, being he has four children. He might be able to help me out a little bit there. And I guess that's it. So, Eric, thanks again for being on the show, brother.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Anytime. So, for Eric Gutman, this is Eric Fiorello. I always say this, go out and just kick some ass. Get some iron. I don't care if it's 5 below. Go out and do something. What were we just talking about? Get involved. Get involved with yourself. Stop worrying about all the other crap. So have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. And have fun.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.